Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Your home is important. That's why GEICO helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The GEICO Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call GEICO and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame fest party!
GEICO presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The GEICO Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit GEICO.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Autobots, roll out.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not alone as I trek through the wonderful world of geekery, such as it has been in this post-endgame world, which, as of today, the spoilers have lifted, but we're still not doing our discussion. We're going to give you guys yet another week to go check that out in theaters. But I'm not alone as I, again, travel through this wonderful geeky world that we have curated for you. I'm joined with my man from Kitchener,
Alex, who this time is not eating any food.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the show professionally. that's okay. I'm drinking G Fuel here out of my giant-ass Avengers cup. Still kind of buzzing with hype over that because I know Mr. Christopher had a chance to go see that on the weekend, so we can have our full discussion hopefully for next week. Maybe we'll get together later on this week when he has a night free and we'll do our Avengers talk and we'll post that up as we're going to be taking a break next week because, Alex, you've got a wedding coming up.
Yes, sir. My brother's getting married on Saturday, so here's my schedule for this week. Tomorrow he's coming by to do like little last minute things to go over the like the order of the events of, you know, basically the plan of the day. Then Wednesday I have a free day to do whatever else I have to get done work wise here for Twig. Thursday I head over to stay over at family's, and Friday is the rehearsal. Saturday is that, and then Sunday I'm going to be resting. So yeah, I think an idea of doing the Avengers discussion, and if it works out, that would be a cool thing to release next week, like for the instead of the show.
Yeah, so that's going to be exciting for you. It's I know this wedding has been a long time coming. You've had your own personal difficulties getting things ready for it and whatever and whatnot, but now it's finally going to happen. Hopefully the weather will cooperate and it'll be a nice, glorious day. I know on my wedding day, for example, it briefly rained, but only enough to wet the seats outside. So they say it's good luck if it rains on your wedding day. So maybe there will be a non-tsunami on your brother's wedding
day. Oh, yeah. So he's been with his fiance now for 6 years, something like that, since high school. maybe wait, oh, wow. High school. So he's 27 years. So yeah, it's more of a formality than anything. They've been living together for almost 2 years now. So I mean, it's just like they wanted to have a nice wedding. It looks like the weather's going to hold out. As with any wedding, there's everything crazy that you're unexpected that could happen beforehand has been happening. But overall, it looks like the weather's going to be fine. It's a fairly small wedding with, I don't think, more than 40 people there, which is pretty good because they're not big hoity-toity with, like, you know, the traditional must have this big, huge thing. They just want to have a nice thing in a nice venue. So went and got my hair cut, and I'm good to go.
Good times. Speaking of things, we want to send a special well wish out to friend of the show and frequent contributor to This Week in Geek, Mike Blanchard, who went in for brain surgery earlier today. And from what I understand from his wife, Karen, who's been posting frequent updates on Facebook, everything went okay. The post-op went as planned. We don't know anything more than that, but he's okay. He's in recovery, waiting for the anesthesia to wear off. So I suppose he'll be back to podcasting sometime, probably in the next week or two. Probably take some time off to recover.
Knowing Blanchard, if they let him, he would be talking on the mic now.
I was kind of the same way because we recorded a brief podcast episode from my bedside when I was in the hospital last year. So
because I remember saying, like, you said, I want to do something. So that's when I brought the portable mic. But if you remember, didn't Blanchard podcast on his wedding?
I want to say he did, or he did something. I remember doing
him and the groomsman and Steve Megatron, the best man. I'm pretty sure they had the wedding, and he, like, I think he podcasted from his reception.
I think he did something. I know when I got married, I did something the weekend it was the weekend of the wedding. Like, we did something on the Friday night. We got married on the Saturday. Or maybe it was the other way around. I can't remember, but it's a podcaster thing. We like to bring people into our lives, such as we do each and every week here through your various RSS feeds and other podcasters. Coming up on the show this week, we got a lot of stuff going on this week. We're going to be taking a look at a Smash Brothers controller coming to us from PDP Gaming, which is the Wired Fight Pad Pro. You're going to be hearing that coming up next. We're also going to have our extended look at Mortal Kombat 11 from NetherRealm Studios on the PlayStation 4 between me and Alex. We'll have a brief discussion about it. Lastly, we'll have Puyo Puyo Champions from Sega and your usual assortment of weird news, which, of course, there's a lot of Avengers news that just how it is for this particular news cycle. And of course, we're going to have a Satan's Pantry we recorded earlier in the year, but we're going to release it. It was supposed to be part of our Elder Scrolls coverage, but we're going to get a little bit of a delay there, but still, it's still good from Inside Editions, from The Elder Scrolls, The Official Cookbook, and The Taste of Tamriel. And, yeah. So, without any further ado, this is my review of the PDP Wired Fight Pad Pro, the Peach Edition, right here on This Week in Geek. I've been Mike the Birdman Daw, joined with Alex the Producer. We'll be back right after this. Hey guys, this is Mike the Birdman Dodd here, and today I'm taking a look at the Wired Fight Pad Pro, the Peach Edition, from PDP Gaming. This is a GameCube-inspired pro controller for the Nintendo Switch. Most notably, you'll be playing Super Smash Bros. Ultimate with this thing, and as a Smash Bros. Player myself, Alex has asked me to take a look at this controller and kind of give my thoughts and impressions on it as a fighting connoisseur. And I gotta say, it's weird to go back to the GameCube controller style since I've been learning on the Pro controller since the Wii U version of Smash Bros. And even the 3DS versions. It's kind of weird to go back to this. And I primarily played a lot of Smash with Super Smash Bros. Brawl back on the original Wii, where I mained Pit and Samus. So going into this on the Nintendo Switch, I've been playing with my main Mega Man and also learning my next guy, which will be Joker from Persona 5. Going back to the GameCube controller has certainly been an experience, and it's one that I'm going to have to relearn, although essentially I am playing with a Pro controller, just it looks like a GameCube controller. And I gotta say, relearning everything, once you get used to it, it's not that bad, because the Pro controller is a totally viable option for the fighting game experience, and you can play with that, you can play with Joy-Cons, you can do any number of different scenarios for Smash Bros. Ultimate. but the GameCube is where the tried and true fighting game community comes from, the original Melee, which is back on the original GameCube. And that's where people really came up and developed super strategies and kind of got their playstyle down pat. Myself, I was a second generation player on the Wii, and playing on this pad, it feels good. I will say that it feels clicky, it feels responsive. I've heard people say they've had input delays. I haven't had any of that. I'm able to block really quickly. I can tech into my throws really easy. And it's a really good and solid feeling controller, especially with the 10 feet of cable they give you. This thing is a dream for tournaments, especially when you don't have to be crowded around a single console. It's nice to have that range, then you will have that range of motion with you. And especially at the price point, they're asking $24.99 as suggested on the manufacturer's website. And that's a steal, because Pro controllers are expensive. And if you have the option to use this in your Smash Brothers experience and you are trained on GameCube, then this is a really good price point for you to get into this particular controller. Outside of that, I just think it's a quality controller. Like I said, it's solid, it feels good. I like the fact that you can replace the C-stick with another full-size stick if you so choose. I didn't do that because that's not my particular style of play. But overall, the PDP Wired Fight Pad Pro is a ridiculously good value, and it's just a solid controller overall.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping, and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
And welcome back to This Week in Geek, your flagship of stupidity. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, joined with Alex the producer. Let's get talking about the things that happened on planet Earth this week, be they be, I don't know what that means, but be they good,
be they
bad,
by the by, be the bada bada boo, be Peter Piper, pick a pack of pickled peppers.
Yes. So, one of the stories we're going to talk about this week is, well, one of the more recent games that launched back in February, which was supposed to be this big, huge event. It was supposed to be the return to classic BioWare, and that was going to be Anthem. This game has been live for just a little over 2 months, and things are not going so well, you might say. Its 90-day roadmap has been delayed, and more recently, three of its lead developers have left the project, and that includes executive producer Mark Dara, lead producer Mike Gamble, and lead director Jonathan Warner. However, with the latter intending to return to the game following a personal sabbatical. Now, on Twitter, this was later confirmed that Anthem's live service head, Chad Robertson, has confirmed that he and Ben Irving, who are leading the game nowadays, are 100% committed to Anthem. And the reason why these people have left the project is BioWare is now changing its focus onto Dragon Age 4, which is going to be yet another...
Thank God.
I have concerns because Dragon Age 4 is also rumored to have some big problems going through its development right now, as it's already gone through two canceled versions, as I understand it.
I choose to live in a world where, in my mind, that first version that they've talked about is still in production.
I think it was codenamed Project Morrison. I think that's what it was originally called.
The J name one, I thought.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Because there's so many articles on this right now, because it seems like every gaming media site is just constantly talking about BioWare and Anthem, that it gets lost in the shuffle. But from what I could read, like that original first version, people are saying, oh, is it by the same team that was doing Dragon Age? It's like, yes and no. It was more like the creative minds that were behind Mass Effect 2 and 3 were trying to then, you know, further what the, you know, what the idea of an open world game would be. And I don't know, they might have to go back now and pull things from those first couple versions and see what they can do. But I'm just hoping, please, God, don't, if they fuck this one up, they're done as a studio. Like, they're really, truly done.
Pretty much, because Anthem was supposed to have this grand 10-year plan, and obviously it fell well below sales expectations with constant problems, with constant patches, people not being happy with the loot system, the end game, and they've even delayed the big Cataclysm event that was supposed to be part of the game's 90-day roadmap. So to say Anthem has problems is, well, a very light statement, to say the very least, and it's just a game that didn't have the quote-unquote BioWare magic where the games just come together in the game's final months, which a lot of sources have been quoting EA management saying, oh, don't worry, it'll have BioWare magic in the end. And Anthem never did. It just was a convoluted mess. You don't know what the hell's going on. The game's end game is virtually non-existent. People just grind the simple missions rather than doing these like stronghold things. And even really simple things like leaderboards and weekly strongholds are still not in the game. They're going to be delayed until they can fix all the bugs and patch more things to the game's end game content. And it kind of sucks. I have fears for Dragon Age 4, but the fact that they are recommitting to it, I think, is good, although I think this whole games as a service thing needs to move away. I've seen very few companies do it well. The most notable company that I can think that does games as a service well is Ubisoft. The Assassin's Creed games are remarkably well served. Rainbow Six being a classic example. Rainbow Six Siege is really well done games as a service. And you could say Overwatch as well. But trying to deliver content drip is not a good idea.
I would say as far as the AAA companies, Ubisoft seems to be the only one that knows what to do when it comes to that.
Yeah, like Ubisoft has a clear direction, or at least they have a better direction than other companies who keep trying to do this AAA games as a service thing. And
yeah, and they with don't a give game, up. Because yeah, like Starlink just had major additions come out, stuff that you would have paid a lot more money for that was free content. They like, we're talking like a whole expansion, more missions on the Switch with the Star Fox team. So even though that game dramatically underperformed, it was a good game. Like we reviewed it, it was a really good game, but it underperformed. But they didn't just go and, you know,
cancel it.
They're continuing on, and in fact made a lot of the stuff free, and it's still good. What I could see happening though is I could see EA just saying, fuck it, we can't do this.
Well, yeah, because they bet so much money on BioWare. The problem is Mass Effect Andromeda really was a commercial failure and a critical failure as well. Anthem was supposed to be the BioWare savior, and it did like shit. So Dragon Age 4 is literally bottom of the ninth inning and two out. This will be the end of BioWare, unless they magically get another chance with another Mass Effect, which I don't see happening. I see that IP being auctioned off at some point. It's shitty.
Could this end up being a situation like the BioWare magic, like you could say was when, what was his name, Casey left and a couple other people left, but
Casey Hudson, yeah.
Yeah. But I would say where people should have started going, huh, was not right after EA purchased them. It was when the two doctors left the company.
I'd say the BioWare magic left when things started to come out about Dragon Age in Inquisition. Fantastic game, really well received, but yeah, when you started to see the working conditions that the studio was being put under.
Yeah, because when you look, the two doctors left, I believe, during the production of Mass Effect 3. I think that was the last thing they had their hand, but they had had their hands on pre-production work of Inquisition. As soon as they leave, then there's a trickle-down effect. Well, why are the two guys that started the company, who are these really intelligent creators that are pushing for the developer rights and everything, why are they leaving? Oh, okay. Well, then why are their senior management leaving? Why are, like, it's in general, a good programmer might get moved up to another thing or get offered a position somewhere else and headhunted. But you weren't hearing about that. And you hear now about how all these people left. The BioWare magic is gone because 40% of the company is different.
Exactly. So the teams that built the original Mass Effect and Dragon Age, that team's long gone. You're only seeing sparse remnants of it left now. And like I said, they've got quite the task ahead of them. Dragon Age 4 needs to be a massive success.
They need a Witcher on their hands with it.
Yeah, they need something critical and commercial to blow the doors off this franchise.
Because we know that what BioWare doesn't do, they don't do cheap games. So they're not going to save money by making the game have a lower budget. And they're not going to save money. No. They're going to be pouring everything they can into it. They just have to remember that, yes, their games were always really good visually, but their games have to have deep, compelling stories. That's what people buy their games for. There's nothing else. You buy they're not the best action RPG. They're not the best turn-based. They're not the best shooter. They were known as the best Western stories in RPGs.
Yeah, and with EA breathing down this games as a service thing down their back, unless I fear how that's going to interfere with BioWare's way of telling stories. So
it could be, now here's the thing. There is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. If let's say this was the next game that comes out and it's abysmally, you know, bad or poorly received, there's a couple things that can happen. They could shutter the studio. They could sell the studio. Or there's other options, but they could end up in a situation like Obsidian. Remember, Obsidian was made from, I think it was Black Isle or something, a couple smaller companies that had done expansions for BioWare games, and then they had made their own property before, was it Alpha Protocol and a couple other things. They were always known as BioWare Light, right? But then they go ahead and secure the license to the South Park game, and they made the Stick of Truth for
THQ. THQ and Ubisoft,
yeah, they made the first one, gets really, really critically acclaimed. Then they make their own Kickstarter campaign and make Pillars of Eternity, which ends up being one of the highest selling PC games of the last like 10 years. What happens? Microsoft buys them up, and now they've got autonomy to do whatever games they want on a smaller budget. But they found what they did best. They were not as good at the crazy 3D high-end stuff that they tried to be. Like, they tried to be BioWare Light, and it didn't work. What they were good at was making very, very intricate, good, compelling stories with maybe not the best graphics. So they went, okay, well, let's go back to making isometric PC games and, you know, working with South Park and that sort of thing. Things that they could play to their strengths. And I think that could happen with BioWare, but not with EA. They're going to have to either separate from EA, have a mass exodus, or have EA just go, fine, have full autonomy.
Exactly. So we'll have to wait and see how this all shakes out eventually in the wash. So good luck to you, BioWare. A lot of eyes are on you. So moving into our next story this week. Well, one of the big things that happened on the internet this week was an asshole on a motorcycle, because I love living on a busy road. But that actually kind of ties into this story. Paramount Pictures dropped the trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog, the long, quote-unquote, awaited movie debut of the Sega character. And reaction to the trailer was not good, to say the very least.
I thought that it was an Ugandan, one of those memes with Knuckles. Do you know the way?
Oh, do you know the way, brother? I love that.
I looked at him like,
terribly racist, but I think it's hilarious.
Well, see, this is the thing. I'm laughing not at that. That part's horrible. I'm laughing at that. That's what the design looks like. If we took that Ugandan Knuckles and then made him in 3D modeled by students at college, that's what you would get.
It looks like a blue furred person. And why does Sonic have human teeth? I've got questions.
The real question is, what does Chris Chan think of all of this? Like,
so I saw someone made a Sonichu version of that, where it's him and James Marsden in the car, and someone also made another meme where this seems like the long-awaited sequel to Hop, with also starred James Marsden.
Well, the issue I have is it's not hard to make Sonic look like Sonic. It just isn't.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow some of the original, like, hell, the Sonic Boom design's not even all that bad, but...
Well, they did it because it's cheaper. They mocap people, and then to make them to make it look less human, like, they tried to give them human proportions. That's the problem, because they mocap the entire footage to save money on animation. somebody went and there's like a Reddit post where somebody's like, look at this. They took, they made that model basically in like 3DS Max or Maya or whatever. And then they went, look at this. And they shrunk it down to like shrunk, made him skinnier, did the things. They said it took an hour of work to fix it. Yet, so it, not perfectly, obviously, but it took an hour of work to fix it to make it look right. So why didn't they do that in the first place?
So according to the film's director, Jeff Fowler, who doesn't have a lot of credits to his, this is his big feature film as far as, if I remember his IMDb correctly, he says, thank you for the support and the criticism. The message is loud and clear. You aren't happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. Everyone at Paramount and Sega are fully committed to making this character the best he can be. Hashtag Sonic movie. Hashtag gotta go fast. And I see a problem with this. The movie is in post. Although Jim Carrey looks great as Robotnik.
Yeah, it's still stupid. I'm going to see the movie, but I think it's the most stupid thing to happen in years.
Yeah, this is Super Mario Brothers level of bad. Like, and I've seen the meme comparing this.
No. This is much worse. This is Rocky and Bullwinkle bad.
We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I'm curious, but point I'm trying to make here is this movie, it's not in picture lock yet. That doesn't come out till November. It won't be in picture lock till probably September, late September, early October. So they've still got tons of time to quote unquote fix this, but they're going to have to redo all the animation. And I've got a lot of friends in the animation industry, and just hearing them talk about this on Twitter, you just created a work crisis for these poor guys. Yes, they'll be well compensated, but this kind of changes how we consume content. The studios are now responding directly to criticism like this. Marvel wouldn't bend, for example.
No, but this is a case where it's one character model. It depends on the rendering method they're using. Like, everything's filmed already, right? And they're just inserting or replacing the mocapped actor green screen with the character. So if the character is already timelined out in whatever software they have, it's just a matter of remodeling it once, and then the whole thing is done. So if they did it smartly, the fact that they're coming out and saying this makes me think that it's a matter of changing the model once and then re-rendering it, which would only be like a week or two to do.
I think that's a brutal oversimplification. I've seen professionals say this is going to be brutal.
It depends. Yeah, it depends on how they did it. If they, well, the model is such low quality anyway that it doesn't make me think that they were doing a painstaking, you know, frame by frame animation on this. I think they tweened it so that do you remember like Flash, when Flash animation was a big popular thing? Mm-hmm. All you would do is tell it, you'd have your model, you'd be like, move, walk this way to this spot, and it would auto do the rest for you. I have a feeling they did a lot of that in this movie, because the model looks like like, regardless of how he's shaped, it's just low blurry quality. Like, I'm really surprised that this is what they went with, seeing as like they could have gone full Roger Rabbit cartoony style and people wouldn't have complained. I feel like they saw the Pokemon movie and they're like, hey, let's do that, but for a quarter of the money.
Yeah, because Detective Pikachu looks whimsical, and they've updated the designs and they look good for what they're supposed to be.
They look almost alive.
Yeah, it looks good. I mean, I'll admit Jigglypuff still looks a little weird, but I'm okay with that. This, it doesn't look right. The fact that Sonic, it's weird to look at Sonic's designs over the years, all the way from the 90s to now. You look at how he's supposed to have almost like this weird Cyclops eye, but I've seen people recreate the images using the trailer footage to have Sonic look like he's supposed to, like from the Archie comics or Sat or the Saturday morning cartoon. It's not that hard.
Hell, even like Sonic Adventure era, like, it's not that hard to model it like that. Why does he have to be furry but then still have the spikes like a cartoon? Like, it doesn't make any sense, really. Like, it's almost like they tried to make, what was that video game? The one where he was the werewolf, the werehog.
Oh, I can't remember what it was called, but I know exactly. Yeah, Unleashed, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what, it's like they took that design and made him skinny.
it looks weird. I mean, I hope the director, Jeff Fowler, and his team can make this cool, but again, if you really want to break it down, we're adults criticizing a kid's movie. I'm still going to see it, just not opening night.
I'm going to see
I'll
it
wait
as well.
Till a cheap night.
I mean, it would be great if we could get hooked up with tickets or something for it, but have a feeling this is one that's not going to screen before press at all.
Yeah, I'm not seeing. I'll be very curious to see what their presence will be like at San Diego Comic Con. My guess is there'll be some kind of a screening.
They might want to show it off or things at E3 as well.
Yeah, like there'll be something in the months leading up to it. There will be some sort of test screening, and I guess keep your eyes on Reddit and Twitter to see what happens with that. So moving on to our last news story this week. A Philippine TV channel airs a pirated copy of Avengers Endgame. So evidently a small cable TV station in the Philippines, I'm not even going to begin to pronounce this, but basically on Orient Cable, a local cable provider, had the genius idea to show Endgame a day after its premiere in the Philippines. And this is the really shitty copy that's been floating around the net for about a week now. Where it has like a bouncing thing around the screen that's like, go to this casino site. However, this cable company violated several laws in the Philippines, including Intellectual Property Code of the Philippines, the Anti-Camcording Act, and the Cybercrime Prevention Act. So yeah. Whose idea was, like, what fucking moron said, you know what, I'm going to risk going to jail for a very long time?
Yeah, so the Philippines is pretty modern in that they have the same like copyright laws that we have. It's not like a third world country. So the only reason I could think of them possibly wanting to do like showing the movie like this is a thought of, hey, they'll never fucking catch us, or they won't care. We'll get away with it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. Someone just assumed, hey, I'm going to get away with it, or it's my last day. Who gives a shit?
It can also be, if it was a small enough, like, was it a cable station? I thought it was like an entire broadcast channel. Like a major channel for the country.
It just says Orient Cable. I haven't looked too much farther into the story. It just says a local cable provider.
So, okay, so that would be like Rogers throwing it on like the local access channel, which is still pretty fucking bad.
Yeah, that's still pretty impressive for them to show this movie that has only been out like a day and a half. It's just, on one hand, really shitty that you would do this because it's a crap. It's a crap quality copy to begin with. I've seen screenshots, and just why, man?
Not just that. Did you read? Like, there's other articles coming out about it too. They were in trouble, fined, right? And they're being sued and everything, right? So they received the letter saying they're getting sued. They accepted it, and then went and broadcast it again.
Oh.
They broadcast it a second time and then started showing other copyrighted stuff. They didn't even give a fuck.
Wow.
Now, I wouldn't be doing this because the Philippines is also the country right now where they have a dictator, a fairly new dictator. He's the one that's fucking
Duterte or something.
He's the one that if you're homosexual and he sees it, you get in trouble. He's also the one that if you or your neighbors see somebody doing drugs, you're allowed to murder them on the spot and tell the police you murdered a drug addict.
Yep, I remember that. And he threatened to go to war with Canada recently over some trash that was sent over quite some time ago. So this guy's not exactly normal.
And he's not exactly normal. And if he doesn't care about it right now, he'll care about the financial, like, if Disney's like, we're just not going to invest anything in your country anymore, he'll just fucking murder the people that at the station.
Yeah, these people are mysteriously going to disappear. It wouldn't surprise me, or at least we haven't heard the last of this story. That is my guess.
Because there is too much money. Disney is invested too much money in every country that they show their movies in. For like, if he kills people because he sees them do drugs, like, what's he going to do when he finds out that they're not going to pay him money?
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be something dramatic happen with this regardless. So, yikes, to say the very least. So coming up next on the show, we're going to be taking a look at Mortal Kombat 11, which is released by NetherRealm Studios on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and the PC. We'll be back right after this, only on This Week in Geek, otherwise known as Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Heggle. What the fuck on this?
Is it possible that the past and future are colliding? Only Kronika has such power.
I intend to restart history. Let the new era begin.
And today we are taking a special extended look, our review and kind of thoughts on the most recent Mortal Kombat game, which is to be released for the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and the PC from NetherRealm Studios. This is a game that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Been a huge fan of the Mortal Kombat franchise since the 1990s. I had the Super Nintendo version. I had the Sega version. I used to hustle kids in the arcade for Mortal Kombat 2 and 3. I've owned almost every home port of the games, and the reboot back in 2009 on the PlayStation 3 I thought was really, 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 really cool, especially with guest characters like Freddy Krueger and Kratos. I thought were really neat. And yeah, longtime friend of the franchise. Alex, what about you?
My introduction to Mortal Kombat was playing MK1 at a local pizza parlor near my school, and I would have been when was MK out? Was it 92? 93?
92, 93. Yeah.
So yeah, I would have been kindergarten grade one. So, you know, I remember playing it. I remember throwing an absolute tantrum, when it ate my quarter too fast in my mind to the point where I flopped on the ground, in a grocery store that had that. Cause remember, sometimes they had them at grocery stores, like at the entrances where, you know, you'd have like the kids rides and all that. That's how big arcades were in up until the early mid 90s, is that you could go to a major grocery store and there'd be a couple arcade machines sitting next to like the pop machines. So I threw a fit and flopped myself down, and my mom went, "Well, I guess we're leaving you here." So she walked around the corner so I couldn't see her, and then I panicked when my mom left me. But that's my first experience, or first couple experiences with Mortal Kombat. It was the first game I got for the Super Nintendo. Now, when the Super Nintendo came out, we didn't get it because we were a poor family. I got the Super Nintendo around 94, 95. And we got that and Mario World, and I played it nonstop, even though there wasn't any blood. And then my brother got more into it with 2, 3, and 4. I played Deadly Alliance and Mythology Sub-Zero, which turned me off of it for a while. Then I came back into it with we used to play a lot of MK Gold. That was the one. Was it Gold on the or Trilogy? The one that was on the N64. I know they had two separate names.
Trilogy, I think it was.
Yeah. Played that a heck of a lot. And then I got back into it again with, was it Armageddon on the Wii?
Mm-hmm.
Played that a heck of a lot. And so I've had a few gaps in my plays through them. Like, I've missed a couple of the games in the series. So to me, it was pretty integral that I catch up on the story with this game.
Yeah, I like how they rebooted everything. The 2009 game essentially reset the Mortal Kombat timeline by giving Raiden this he must not win or he cannot lose or something. Basically, time travel and multiple dimensions start coming into the Mortal Kombat universe, and things are, well, as you might say, screwy with the timeline. And this latest Mortal Kombat game continues the story started back in the reboot through Mortal Kombat X, with Liu Kang and Katana being revenants created by Quan Chi, as Raiden basically had them killed. The new story follows Raiden as he's this dark version, this edgy version, where he decapitates Shinnok, and that upsets the balance of the realms. And now Kronika, who's a new elder god who is basically controls time.
It's like an elder god, but above the elder gods. Because
she controls existence itself.
Basically, she made the elder gods, or some of them at least. So it's like she's beyond. It's like a new level of god, super god.
Well, yeah, because she controls existence, thus the flow of time, so she can go back and change things if she wants. And with Raiden decapitating Shinnok, which is revealed to be her son in the game, it's upset Earthrealm, the Netherrealm, and Outworld, and now past and future are now colliding as they want to go back in time to erase Raiden from the timeline so that Outworld and other realms may have a chance to restore the quote-unquote balance. And of course, that's not good for the good guys that we have left, such as Johnny Cage, Cassie Cage, Jackie Briggs, Jax, etc., etc. And you get, I don't know whether I like the conclusion to this game, because the storyline takes about 12 chapters to go through. It'll take you between 4 and 6 hours to clear.
Yeah, it took me, basically, I played a little bit one night, and then I played on a Saturday, I played probably 3 hours. I played it on normal until I got to the very end, and then I was like, screw this, this is too hard, I'm going down to easy. And even then it was kind of difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the story mode, and that's the main reason I play the Mortal Kombat games, is for the story, because I'm really invested in a lot of these characters. And it used to be the old trope, you don't play fighting games for the story. Well, you could make that argument for Street Fighter, but when it comes to Mortal Kombat, it's always been about over-the-top violence, but a story, goofy, but it is a story that follows a through line. There is a mythology, there is a lore for you to follow. And this being the end of the new trilogy, when we get the fusion of Liu Kang, who's been resurrected, or at least a version of Liu Kang has now exists, and he's been bonded with Raiden, the form fire god Liu Kang, and now him and Katana control existence, and he has to reshape the future. And it's weird. I don't know how I feel about this game's story. I wasn't left satisfied.
They might need another reboot or something, or like, is somebody going to wake up and be like, it was all a dream?
Oh, yeah, like, it's going to be strange to see how this happens when the new game processes forward, like, what characters are going to come back, because in this game, they kill Scorpion or Hanzo Hashashi, and now you have the old Scorpion as the new one, which is weird. You have Sonya Blade killed off, although I guess the younger version still exists, but once again, does that matter now that Fire God Liu Kang now controls time and has to rebuild the timeline? What will happen to Earthrealm? What will happen to Outworld? What will happen to the Netherrealm? Will we ever see our classic characters again? This is essentially a brand new franchise. So I'm kind of curious, but enough about the story. Let's talk about the actual combat mechanics themselves.
Can I just to get out of the way, can I just say the bad things I don't like initially so that we can then talk about the good?
Microtransactions, go away.
Microtransactions, fuck you. Pardon my French, but fuck you. That's just, it's a little too much. I don't like the idea of having to pay for one-use items to just make the game fun for certain parts, like turning off traps and stuff. So that I'll never pay for, and I think a lot of people won't pay for that. That seems to be shoehorned in. I'm sorry, Warner Brothers, that's just too much to ask. Now, the only other parts that I didn't care for, they changed the movesets of some people.
Yes,
and
especially,
it was funky. Like, it was weird.
One of the things I did notice, to talk about the mechanics, the game is drastically slowed down. Walk speeds have been reduced. There is no run button. So it feels more like classic combat where you're not zipping across the screen or you're not tied to meter all the time. Like X-ray moves, which are now called finishing blows, only happen once per match. And if you miss, you miss. Or if they're blocked, they're blocked. So that's a new mechanic that I do like, actually. But I do like how the flow of combat's a little bit slower, but I don't like how some of the moves have changed. For example, I'm an old school Scorpion player, And it was always back-back high punch for his spear, back-back low punch. I can't remember. I think it was high punch. But now it's back to forward square. And it just it throws off my combo timing. However, that being said, the game's combo system is very accessible, but you have to be willing to learn it. This game is easy to play and pick up, but it will take you a long time to master. Kind of like how Killer Instinct kind of took a different approach to combos. Mortal Kombat has the dial a combo system. And I do like it. I like how slow this game is. It feels very, very much like you're playing chess. Like there's one move to counter
the pacing is good. Definitely. The only other, like, so other than, you know, microtransactions, the moveset changing, the only other thing I don't care for is it feels like it wasn't very well optimized to use the hardware, in that my system screams in pain at when it tries to load screens. I'm playing it on a PS4 Pro, but I'm playing it at 1080p, and even then, you have to play with headphones because it's so loud that you can see it struggling to load. And it's not like this is the most graphically intensive game, but you can hear the fans go woo anytime you're in battle, and then anytime a cutscene plays, it goes back down to normal. So I don't know what they did there, but that's not normal for a fighting game. So there's I found that there's a lot of load screens or things to try to mask that there's load times in this.
One of the things I didn't much care for this, and it's been in the most recent games, like definitely in the last couple of years, there's something called the Crypt where you can wander around Shang Tsung's island and find things. You can be rewarded with cosmetic items or coins or whatever. Yeah,
like a pseudo-adventure role-playing aspect.
Kinda, yeah. And before, the items would be mapped out. You knew exactly where they were. You, like, go down to this cave at these coordinates, you'll find Scorpion's spear tip or something like that. You knew where stuff was. Now, everything in the crypt, I think, is randomized, and I don't like that. I want to know where my stuff is. It would take a very long time to unlock every cosmetic and every augment for the game's characters. And I'm not particularly fond of that. I guess I wanted something very, very straightforward, like previous games, but the game does encourage microtransactions. If you want to buy time crystals, you can buy your cosmetics, or you can do things to make things easier when you go through the game's challenge towers if you want, but I've never really played those. I'm not a big fan of them to begin with. I just want to fight against my friends. I don't want to play much online, though the game's netcode is okay.
Yeah, like I did notice that I didn't have any cutouts. I am playing, I have a gigabit Ethernet connection to gigabit internet, so I mean, I'm not necessarily the best judge of that, but if a game had poorly coded net code, I would notice.
Yeah, and the fact that you can tell what your opponent has when you play online is a very nice feature. I do welcome it, though I mostly played offline and local with friends like this. I didn't take this game online much, so I really, that's kind of where my expertise ends, but as a fighting game, I'm very curious to see where this competitive scene goes.
Me
because
too.
Mortal Kombat relies on combos. There's a lot of juggles. Like, hell, when you go through the game's tutorial, it talks about here's your frames of startup, here's your frames of invincibility. It wants you to know all these detailed things. And if anything, the Warner Brothers and the NetherRealm people do fighting games really well. Injustice was a game that has a fantastic fighting game scene. Mortal Kombat 11, I suspect, will have an equally good one at Evo and other shows like that. If I did have a major complaint, is you see some characters show up in the story that don't show up as playable.
They'll be purchasable, you know it.
See, I want Sector and Cyrax. They show up in the game very, very early on, but you don't get to play as them. And I was really looking forward to playing as Sector again.
I want a new version of Goro and stuff. I want, like, there's nobody really in this that's like over the top, weirdly huge or strange. It's all It's very stripped down, I think. And there's going to be like an XL version of this. You know they're going to do something like that eventually.
Well, supposedly the roster has already leaked for the characters that will be available, like Spawn, the Terminator, Ash Williams.
That'll be interesting if they get, like, they have to get Bruce Campbell to do it, right?
Oh, God, yeah. There's nobody else who possibly could. So I'm curious to see what'll happen with this game's life cycle down the road. I hope it remains popular. I enjoyed my time with it, but I think
yeah,
I would say maybe wait a little while to see if there's a sale on this game.
Yeah, there's some kinks that need to be worked out. They need to either include more characters, drop the price a bit, balance out some of those areas that so you won't need as many microtransactions. There's some stuff
although
there's some hiccups. Now, that being said, to me, this is a better launch than like the last Street Fighter was or Marvel vs. Capcom was. Like they've had a pretty good launch compared to their contemporaries.
Absolutely. This is a complete game. If you want to play online, you have that option. You want to play through the endless challenge towers and all that stuff and the special timed ones, you can do that. There's a wonderful tutorial. You're getting a full game. And that's something you really couldn't say for a lot of the contemporaries. As you mentioned, Street Fighter, Marvel vs. Capcom, etc. here. I might say wait for a sale and just see what you can do because the game just came out. There's always a sale coming when it comes to fighting games, especially if you look around the Best Buy, Target, whatnot. There's always going to be some kind of a publisher sale during the summer. There always is. So my recommendation is buy it. If you're a hardcore fan, you've got this already. If you want to, I might say maybe avoid the collector's edition because you're only getting skins and the characters which haven't officially even been announced outside of Shang Tsung. So that's my official recommendation is buy it. If you're a hardcore fan, if you're a casual fan, maybe give it a play first, maybe a rent because I think there's services like still Gamefly around. So, check it out.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And now to take on the world of the weird, wacky, and the display and fucked up, it's us here on Twig talking about the weird news such as it is here on the big blue marble we call home, otherwise known as Earth. Well, Alex, can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
Not anymore. I knew as a kid.
Well, the cool thing is it's real now. So New York City announced that May 1st is Sesame Street Day, and they actually made the intersection of West 63rd Street and Broadway Sesame Street. So the in honor of the show's 50th anniversary, we had Big Bird there, we had Elmo, we had like all the big Sesame Street characters were there, and I think that's really cool. Like I didn't know the show had been on the air since 1969.
Wait, what street did it say?
It says it is West 63rd Street and Broadway.
So do they just get a bunch of snowplows out to push all the homeless people out of the street? Because like, that's pretty much, yeah. But yes, 1969. I knew that it was, I knew it predated, it predated PBS, I believe. Was that, or was it, no, Mr. Rogers predated it. I knew it was on that long. I just, did you know that it's not on PBS anymore and that it's on HBO?
I did know that, actually, because now they can do a lot more with it. They get a lot more celebrities on there.
I thought you were going to say it's HBO, so they can say fuck and show titties and everything. No, it's not.
Although they did have a Game of Thrones crossover with Sesame Street last week.
Okay, well, that's great, but did you know that they did one with The Sopranos?
I did, actually. I did know that.
With Pauly, and he starts like basically swearing in Italian.
I'm surprised at all the crossovers that Sesame Street has had over the years from various celebrities.
Like and Paul Rudd being super phenomenon. High multiple times on there, like super, super high.
I can't remember who it was. I can't remember, so I'm not going to mention it. But anyway, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio had said he was joined by Big Bird, Elmo, Bert, Ernie, and others. 50 years of extraordinary programming. 50 years of making people's lives better. 50 years of helping children believe in themselves. I think that's something really cool. He also goes on to say, there's also something beautiful for us watching when they were young to see our own city, even our own neighborhood portrayed in Sesame Street. And you cannot take the New York out of Sesame Street, can you? I think that's really cool. Just the fact that Sesame Street now exists, RoboCop's going to have a statue in Detroit, the Rocky statue in Philadelphia. It's kind of cool just to know that all these little things exist in the real world now. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me with all the money Marvel has if we see an Avengers Tower or Stark Industries show up in New York at some point.
Well, like, what would Toronto get? Like, a statue to the Pizza Rat, or like just like Doug Ford or Rob Ford laying on the ground smoking crack or something?
I don't know how to feel about that.
No, like if you think like iconic, I guess. Well, isn't there a? I'm pretty sure that there's a statue of John Candy in Toronto.
So, I think there is. There's something to SCTV.
I know Phil Hartman has one. Where is he from again?
Los Angeles, isn't he?
No, Phil. No, was he from there?
I don't know.
I thought he had one from like St. Catharines or someplace or something like that.
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
You do get like celebrities that have these sorts of things, but I'm trying to think of like an icon. Would it be like having Wolverine in like Saskatoon or something?
See, that'd be really cool. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Vancouver gets a Deadpool statue. Actually, I think Deadpool's from Regina. He's from Saskatchewan. I know that for sure.
Whenever they make a comic book character a Canadian, it's got to be somebody from like the prairies. They never make him from anywhere else. If it's from Vancouver, the guy's a stoner. If it's somebody from like the Yukon or Northwest Territories, they're basically mountain men. If they're from the East Coast, they're fishermen. If they're assholes, they're from Quebec. And if they're from Ontario, they just look and talk like New Yorkers, apparently.
That's how we roll. Moving on to other weird news. Evidently, Burger King is entering a unique way to present some of its meals. Basically, the new options are called Real Meals, and they're based upon a selection of different moods, such as the Pissed Meal, the Blue Meal, the Salty Meal, the Yes Meal, and the DGAF meal, which I presume stands for don't give a fuck.
Okay.
And this is supposed to address the importance of mental health, celebrate being yourself, and feeling however you want to feel. They're doing this to bring attention to the cause, so they've partnered with Mental Health America on the campaign and selected May for its launch of mental health awareness. And if you look at some of the boxes, they say no one is happy all the time. I don't know what's in these meals. I'm actually kind of curious.
I'm assuming it's basically...
I kind of want one of the boxes, though.
I'm assuming it's probably just the regular, like, Whopper or whatever, or like the Junior Burger. It's whatever the normal combo is. It would be funny if, like, instead of a toy, you get, like, here's a nail file, or like here's like
something adult useful, yeah, later.
A thimble and thread.
Well, there was something like they did this in, I think, the United Arab Emirates. They had a sexy time meal, and I don't know whether it was Burger King or whether it was KFC, but you got some kind of an adult happy meal, and it came with like a sex toy or something.
It's like, here we've got I guess they wouldn't want to give you anything with hot sauce for sexy time meal, because that could be problematic.
That's asking for trouble.
Which is stories for another time. but what they what was it, like they get a condom or something in the meal?
Yeah, it was something useful. It promoted safe sex, but it also had a really weird, funny twist to it.
In the Arab Emirates? Are you serious? Like that seems
it was some kind of odd. I think it only ran for like a week or two, but I remember it being promoted pretty widely at the time, but I can't remember the specific details of it. So weird. Yay for mental health awareness. Obviously, I'm a big proponent of mental health, being bipolar myself. And as the campaign says, no one is happy all the time. All right, so moving on to our last story. Evidently in Canada, specifically Quebec, there has been a mysterious fraudster known in the media as the Quebec Hamburglar, who hacks McDonald's app accounts and racks up hundreds or even thousands of dollars to people. So evidently one guy who had his account hacked was used to order $2,000 worth of McDonald's items in Montreal. They've called this guy the Hamburglar.
Would it be the Hamburglar?
Hamburglar. So eventually the bank did refund this guy's money, but he says, to me, it just seems a bit negligent, like they don't really care. McDonald's should at least be sending out a mass email to everyone who has the account to say, hey, you should probably reset your password. Because I remember hearing about this Hamburglar guy a couple of months ago, where people were just getting their accounts drained of stuff like that. And you have to be careful with these type of apps and everything.
Some guy like, oh, I'm going to steal your cheeseburger.
And he has on like the like striped black and white outfit, complete with a little friggin' domino mask.
Shamrock shake and Le Poutine. I have it all. You can't catch me. Double coffee. Ooh, I'll take that. He's twirling his evil French mustache.
It weirds me out to think that somewhere in Montreal or wherever this guy's doing it, there's a police file, and you know it's nicknamed the Hamburglar case. And you know someone could insert the clip from the click from the Clerks cartoon,
yeah,
saying, well, this Grimace. Administration ever bring the Hamburglar to justice? No. I mean, yes. It'll happen. I mean, I hope they catch this guy. You know what, no one wants to be ripped off.
Well, is he going to go and then, like, leave there and go to, like, I don't know, Alberta, and then become the Burger Bandit or something out in cow country?
I'm trying to figure what other apps that could be vulnerable, because there's tons of pizza ordering apps. I know someone was using – there was someone who was ripping off DoorDash – and what's the other one? Just Eat.
Yeah.
Us.
Yeah, Just Eat, DoorDash, and then the other big one up here is Uber Eats, but that one's garbage.
Yeah, so obviously, people, if you have credit cards attached to these things, reset your password periodically. Keep an eye out to the news to see if there has been any kind of data breach, because it doesn't take much, and you don't want to be ripped off of thousands of dollars.
You know what the easiest thing to do is? Most banks, at least again in Canada, I don't know what it's like in the States, but you can go, when you sign up for e-banking, you can sign up for alerts where the second you make a deposit or any account activity, like when I use my debit card and tap it to go at a store and it charges me $10 for whatever groceries, I get an email that second saying your card was used to make a purchase at this location at this time, just for your notifications. Like, sure, you get a lot of emails depending on how much you use it, but it's no harm. It's not like you can delete the email when you're done, but I always know when my card is being used now.
Yeah, I have certain things turned on for my data thing, where I'm like, your account was accessed so-and-so, is this you? And I have my phone wake me up in the middle of the night. Should anything weird happen, I'm ready to go. But obviously, folks, practice safe data, because you don't want to be one of those people who becomes an unfortunate victim. But that's all we have for the weird news this week. So we're going to throw things over to us for Satan's Pantry, where we take a look once again at the Elder Scrolls cookbook we took a look back at in March. And then we're going to take a look at Puyo Puyo Champion from Alex from Sega. We'll be back, guys, right after this.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
I used to be an adventurer like you. Then I took an arrow in the knee.
Oh yes! Yes, the kindly stranger.
I've been waiting for you to return to consummate our love.
Let me guess. Someone stole your sweet roll.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decide to take a walk down the devil's grocery aisle of your local convenience store, big box retailer, or perhaps stuff on Amazon.com, depending. So, as you've heard this season, we have tried different things from various cookbooks, be it Fallout 76, be it the official cookbook of the WWE, or the Elder Scrolls cookbook. And, well, we decided earlier to try a random recipe that I had my wife, Blair, pick out of the official Elder Scrolls cookbook we tried out a while back. And we are going to try something today called honey pudding, which is not something I remember from Morrowind or from Skyrim itself, but I also wasn't really looking for it. Now, considering it's from the game, I'm just going to presume it is just one of those things that is in the game anyway, because it's not like they're going to put it in there just for the sake of it being there. I'm actually going to read you the official excerpt from it. Now, this is originally a Khajiit dish, which is the cat people that inhabit the world of Tamriel. This pudding has evolved without the moon sugar, letting the natural sweet flavors of honey shine through. Different varieties of honey will each give a slightly different flavor depending on the flower from which it was made. So, I love the cat people because Khajiit has wares if you have coin. So, my wife, being the cat person today, has decided to bless us with some of the honey pudding. So, without any further ado, we are going to try some of this chilled honey pudding, which has been sitting in our freezer for about 2 or 3 hours. And we're going to give her a big old spoonful right now. Which, by the way, if you want to see pictures of this, you can check our official Instagram, which is twig_official podcast, I believe. Otherwise, just check me out on Twitter and Instagram at Birdman Dodd. I'm sure it's there somewhere.
And yes, Alex is here.
Oh, yeah. Well, typically I have my co-host Alex and my wife Blair.
I took a couple spoonfuls of this one. I actually don't care for it.
Really?
I'm not... This kind of pudding, I'm not a big fan of.
Okay. What is it that you don't particularly like about it?
Texture and the flavor is not what I usually go for.
If this was a lot colder, I think I'd really, really dig it. Like, if this was like a frozen pudding pop.
It's not okay. It's not that it wasn't cooked right. It's not that there's anything wrong with people that like this type. Mm-hmm. It's just not a flavor or a texture that I would normally go for in a pudding.
It is a very mild flavor. And as it said when Birdman read out the description, it is mainly flavored just by honey. And I did use clover honey, which is one of the milder types. So basically, it's a vanilla, thin-ish, custardy. You're not really a custard person either, are you?
For the most part, no. Like, I'm not even, you know, I know in the past we tried the porridge, and that was a custardy. I'm okay with a rice pudding, but it can't be too custardy. I think the issue is, for me, this is something that I would have with a cake that I would then be dipping the cake into.
Dude, how about you put the honey pudding in the sweet roll?
It tastes like a filling or something that would be dipped into. It doesn't feel like it's substantial enough on its own. Mm-hmm. But again, that's my personal preference. I don't think there's anything wrong inherently with it. I wasn't grossed out at all.
I wonder if I made it too thin and that's what the issue
is. No, it's the flavor as well. I'm not a tapioca person. I'm not a... That's sort of what it is, I guess.
The first time, admittedly, we did try this along with the salt rice pudding just a little bit ago as a surprise. I made it for dessert one night. I just sat in the kitchen and I made it. First thing that came out of my mouth, it's the base of tapioca pudding. It's tapioca without the pearls.
That's basically it. I'm just not a tapioca person. Yeah. Again, nothing wrong with it. Like, this is not me going, ew, it's disgusting. It's just, it's not my, I would eat it, but it's not my thing.
Yeah. I'd say overall this one, your mileage will definitely vary. I think with this one, I'd prefer if it was, the colder this thing could possibly get, the better it would taste to me. But overall, I do like it, but again, your mileage may vary. Once again, if you want to try this recipe, you can find this in the Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook by Chelsea Monroe Cassille, once again from Inside Editions. Big thanks to them for providing this to the show. And without any further ado, back to me, Tristan, and Alex. We'll be back right here on Twig, your flagship of stupidity.
My pen is mightier than swords, it's the right choice. They call me MF Doom and I use my voice. With each rap, my speech craft keeps stacking. If you could see the graph, you'd actually be laughing. You'll never sound as fresh, I'm a rock star. I climb the
7,000 steps to high her off.
Well, Sega's gone and done it. They got me hooked on Puyo Puyo. I didn't know if that was going to be possible because, to be honest, I wasn't a super-duper big fan of the Puyo Puyo Tetris that came out on the Switch when, I guess, shortly after the Switch launched and then was ported to other systems. I just wasn't as into it, I guess, at the time, but I had an opportunity to review the brand new Puyo Puyo, which just came out, or is coming out, depending on when this review gets out there. It is Puyo Puyo Champions. And, yeah, it comes out on the 7th of May, which should be either right now or tomorrow or maybe the day before, whatever. But what we have here is a very interesting game. You're looking at it, it's from the ground up. It's not like a port or anything. This isn't one of those games where they just went and slapped a ROM on and then used an emulator or anything. No, this is Puyo Puyo Champions is a ground-up game that has two modes of play, either Puyo Puyo 2 or Fever. Now, Fever adds a lot of interesting aspects and is almost too many things to go into with this game. Basically, if you've played Puyo Puyo, or most of people out there that in the West have played the Sonic's Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. Well, that was a Puyo Puyo game that just reskinned with Sonic characters. So you know what they are. They're like little blobby things that you have to connect four of them in a row or four of them around an area. They have to be touching to then break, and you get combos for breaking, you know, patterns of more, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it will launch super moves from the characters you get to select against your, you know, opponents. And you can have up to 8 players in this game. There is an online mode. Because I had an advanced review copy, there wasn't anybody I was really connecting with in Canada or in the States. I did get a dude in Alaska, and I did connect with a lot of Japanese players, and holy crap are they good. So, you know, as soon as it launches to the general public, you're going to see a lot more people on there. It was buttery smooth. Even me connecting to the Japanese players on a Japanese server, you know, we're talking halfway around the world. In the middle of the night when I was playing, I had zero lag issues. I had the online aspect of it is pretty spot on. It records every gameplay that you do, and you can replay it on your records of everything you've done, which is really cool. And again, I'm trying to figure out how to explain everything in this game. It's like, what if you had the perfect puzzle game that you loved, and there was every mode imaginable you could see? You can customize the AI of the players, the AI of what gets sent to you, how much damage you do to other people. You can change the backgrounds amongst dozens and dozens of backgrounds. You can change your characters. There is a sloth of characters. I play as a bear, who is a bear that has a scientist suit with beakers and stuff, and I just call him Science Bear. Science Butt Bear, because his face looks like it has a butt on it. So I am Science Bear every time. There are other players, and they're all unique and interesting. There's like a Pikachu knockoff. there's a lot of weird characters in this game. So you end up selecting your characters. You can select the modes, either online or offline. There's battle. There's head-to-head with a player in the room. There's tournament modes where, you know, you compete in a tournament bracket, and doing so, if you're having yourself against a bunch of computer players, the computer players, you can have the option to watch their match, or you can have the option to skip it and just keep going until you get a trophy or something. It can get difficult farther in the game. If you have the AI on hard, I was playing with my roommate, and we were laughing so incredibly hard at how unforgiving the AI is and how you just get blasted and just destroyed super quick if you're not careful. So it was kind of ridiculous. Now, this is available. I was playing it on the Switch, and I've had absolutely no issues with load times, lag. It's extremely colorful. So this isn't going to be something that is taxed by your system on the go or plugged into the TV. It's going to be available on the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One, the Switch, and Steam on PC. It's retailing for 10 Americans, so that means in Canada we're looking at anywhere from $11 to $15 or so. And it's going to be well worth it because it's fully featured. There's no story mode, but you don't need story mode. You have the option of playing online, offline. I was playing it for at like 3 in the morning when I couldn't sleep the one night for like 10, 15 minutes. You have the option to switch on English or Japanese audio. And you can also turn on French, German, or Spanish text. There's it's so deep. Like I haven't even encountered all of and actually set all of the settings yet, or seen everything that I can do. You can turn, like, I wanted to save battery life, so I turned my screen down to the lowest brightness, went on airplane mode, played offline, and then I turned off HD Rumble, and I wanted to see how long I could play. I played for 2 hours on my Switch and had only lost 20% of the battery, which is pretty darn good. So this is a very efficient game that way. Now, the coolest thing in my mind is you can go in and go into your settings and change the design of the Puyo Puyo characters from those little blobs. You can make them look retro, where they look like 8-bit. You can make them look like they're on the Sega Master System. You can change them to metallic-looking things that look like fruit, that sort of junk. My favorite setting is to switch it to the Sonic setting, and then all the little blob colors look like different Sonic characters, which is kind of neat. And there's like, again, there's like 15 or 20 of those things you can switch them to. So there is like so much customization in this game, and at the core, it's still that Puyo Puyo puzzle, you know, Tetris-ish style gameplay, and it's super duper fun. So, it's available digitally. For $10 American, $15-ish Canadian, it's a no-brainer. It's something you can play on the go, and I highly recommend it.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on This Week in Geek. Once again, big thanks to Alex for putting together the champion or Puyo Puyo Champions by Sega. And for us taking a look at Mortal Kombat 11, hopefully you enjoyed our discussion on it. Hopefully you'll make up your own mind whether to pick up this latest NetherRealm fighter for your system of choice. And of course, big thanks to PDP Gaming for providing me with the Fight Pad Pro, the Peach Edition, because hey, I love fancy looking controllers.
It's a really pretty controller.
It really is. And I like the fact that the cord's 10 feet too. So it makes it really easy to play with in my particular setup. So coming up on the site this week, we're going to be a little light on content. As we did mention, Alex has a wedding this week. So we're going to take the week off, but you will be getting Turtle Treasure, which should be on your feeds as of right now. I took the day to edit the show. So sorry, folks, it's Tuesday. Deal with it. I mean that with love. We're going to have some more commentaries coming up before the end of the month, before the really hot weather hits. So me and Alex will be reviewing some stuff. Our discussion for Avengers Endgame, we're going to talk to Mr. Christopher and see if we can get him on Discord at some point this week or early next to talk about it, because Spider-Man Far From Home has released a new trailer with a major spoiler right in the opening seconds.
I have not seen yet, so I will watch after this.
Yes, trust me, it's pretty kick-ass. So anyway, guys, so for Twig, we have been...
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live for your dying hard, and as my friend Jackie Bam Bam says, be cool, be kind, be careful. We'll catch you guys next week right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Well, that's our show.
All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi.
So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance. Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.